Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money, major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never change anything.
Out to move, come out. many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay, I don't know if anybody can hear me. I'm refreshing my page on my computer so I can see the studio. And okay, and we're having tech difficulties, and this happens every now and then on Blog Talk, but it doesn't happen too frequently. That's why I've been sticking with them for the last 8 consecutive years. Today, our topic is sundown towns. And, okay, it looks like we're back in business. I don't know what happened. I don't know what the glitch was. But the topic sundown towns, if you know what sundown towns were, what is a sundown town? 619-768-2945 is the number. Let's go back and see what we can get.
I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me. And however, he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone, and I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called, and I punched in the code, and the dude said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this it, I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, I wanted to be on TV, I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It said, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sober from the Comedy Caravan. This was a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back, and I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida, and that night I made the $150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone. I call Chuck Sutton. I say, hey, man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I call Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on a plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man, so... He said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the sixth floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you, don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw in the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there. Another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduced myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I'd have had this four pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie, then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass, then he went back to them jokes, and they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps, and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This is Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened. The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just said, Lord, Lord, Lord. And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. They paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I had never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night, and I was killing. But every time we went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because the Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at the Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn-back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida. I make $300. Then I go to New York, I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful. Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept, so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Here's the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you're doing, you're wasting your time. Do you hear me? You're wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times.
You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, if you just do it 10 more times.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money. And war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They want to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
All right, the topic for today, well, I don't think we've ever covered this. We could have mentioned it, but really never covered it, will be sundown towns. Sundown towns, exactly what is a sundown town or what was a sundown town and the new way to do sundown towns. So we'll be back with that in about 3 minutes. 619-768-2915. Oh, hold it, that's wrong. 619-768-2945 is the call-in number. Press 1.
And all you
posted the topic of the show, or the podcast, the live stream. It started off, the original title for today was Sundown Towns, and we're going to read, we'll go through Wikipedia and give the definition of what a sundown town is. But I've altered the title or renamed the podcast today to Sundown Towns Chess. All right, Sundown Towns Chess. So listen, and I've got some notes in the program description that help at least guide me through and hopefully you as well. So let's look up Sundown Towns here online, and let's go to Wikipedia. Okay. Sundown towns, also known as sunset towns, gray towns, or sundowner towns, were all white municipalities or neighborhoods in the United States that practiced a form of racial segregation by excluding non-whites via a combination of discriminatory local laws, intimidation, or violence. The term came from the signs posted that colored people had to leave town by sundown. Entire sundown counties and sundown suburbs were also created by the same process. The practice was not restricted to southern states, with New Jersey and other northern states being described as equally inhospitable to black travelers until at least the early 1960s. Discriminatory practices and actions distinguish sundown towns from towns that have no black residents for demographic reasons. Historically, the towns have been confirmed as sundown towns by newspaper articles, county histories, and works in the WPA Works Progress Administration files, corroborated by the tax on U.S. Census records showing an absence of black people or sharp decrease in black population between the two censuses. Now, they have a history on here. I'm not going to read all that at this point. There's a book called The Negro Motorist Green Book. They had a movie about that, Sundown Suburbs and 21st Century. Okay. And we'll probably make reference to this. As well. Okay. Let me bring out the chessboard. Well, we're going to bring out the Sundown Towns chessboard. Now, the Sundown Towns chessboard, like the first thing, for those of you who don't play chess, checkerboard is a different thing, but we're using the chessboard. The first thing, if you want to learn how to play chess, is you need to get familiar with the board. And the board represents the landscape that exists. So in this case, with Sundown Towns chess, we're taking a look at what's the landscape like of the United States, which is a vast, it's vast, from the Florida Keys on up to Alaska. Matter of fact, let me look this up right now. Okay. I'm going to take it from Miami because Miami is not the bottom of Florida. Miami let me get right in here. Miami, Florida. To let's say Nome, Alaska. Okay, and of course, you know, the United States goes on out to Hawaii, but I'm just going to take it up to Nome, Alaska, because that's something that we can drive without taking a plane. okay, from Miami, Florida, which is not the bottom of the United States, to Sonoma, Alaska, which is not the top of the United States, is 4,479 miles. Okay. And you know what? Let me add one more thing in here. Drive time. Let's see. Drive time from Miami, Florida to Nome, Alaska. Let's see. Well, no, I need drive time. Boy, no results. I guess a lot of people don't. We know the distance, but we. All right, well, let me try that. We got the distances over 4,000 miles. Okay, well, I was looking for the time to drive. Well, all right, we'll figure that out another day. All right. So, now, that's a long distance, over 4,000 miles. Now, I'm going to use the statistics of the population of the United States today. Matter of fact, let's get up to the minute. USA population clock. We're setting up the board here. We want you to, you know, we're using the population clock for today all right, there are 342,749,580 people in the United States as of right now. You know, that number goes up because due to births and deaths or whatever, but that's right now. And it's slowly, there's somebody being born. So the population, as I speak, is now 342,749,581 people are in the United States right now. There's one birth every 9 seconds, one death every 13 seconds. So that's where we are right now. Okay. Now, as it stands in the United States right now, once again, we're playing Sundown Town Chess, CHESS. 86% of the population of the United States occupies 5% of the total landmass. Now, the chessboard, I believe, has 67 squares. Let me double check that. Number of squares. Squares. Oh, come on. Wait a minute. Number of squares on chessboard, which is a landscape, okay? Sixty-four squares on a chessboard. So let's take the number 64, and 5% of that is 3.2. So, you know what? And I'm gonna round it up. I'm gonna say it's 4. You know, just to simplify things. So out of 64 squares, the chessboard that we're looking at, because we're playing Sundown Town Chess. Out of the 64 squares that represent the total landmass of the United States, only 4 of those squares, 86% of the population of the United States lives in only 4 of those squares as of today's date in 2022, June 7th, 2022. 64 squares. And 86% of the population lives, plays, whatever, on just four of those squares. That represents 5% of the land, total land mass of the United States. 14% of the population of the United States, they're scattered among the other 60 squares, which is and you know what? 22% of what's left is wilderness. But you got a lot of rural land out there. Now, okay, so that's the landscape today. And today it's more urbanized than it was during the time period of, you know, these sundown towns in the United States. Okay, so let me go to my program notes. Okay. Now, in the United States right now, where those 330-plus million people live, there are 19,500 municipalities. There are more towns than that, but those are the incorporated ones called municipalities. They have their communities have a municipal charter. They're municipal corporations. So there are 19,500 of them, and only 10 of them have a population of a million or more people. All right, that's all part of the landscape. That's all part of the landscape. So, 41,000 zip codes in the United States. All right. Now let's go back to sundown towns. Okay, so these were towns that, you know, once again, let me read it. Okay. Sundown towns, also known as sunset towns, gray towns, sundowner towns, were all white municipalities or neighborhoods in the United States that practiced some form of racial segregation by excluding non-whites via some combination of discriminatory local laws, intimidation, or violence. Period. Now, this might be hard for some people to believe, but there were some black towns here in the United States that were no white folks allowed to be in towns. I've been in at least one of them. At least one of them. Where white folks weren't allowed in town, and there's another town I was in where white folks were not allowed to be in town at the sundown. These were black towns, but there's a black version of the sundown town too. I've been in them. But a lot of people don't want to talk about that. Now, we're not talking about today, but in these towns, you hear the history of the towns, and I'll name one of them. Taft, Oklahoma, which is a historically black town, they have white people living in Taft right now. Not that many, and everybody gets along, but Taft, the overwhelming of the population is black today. But at one time in Taft, white folks were not allowed to be in Taft, because in Taft, for over the last 100-plus years, it has been black folks who are the legal authorities and enforcers of law in that particular town. Small town, about 350 people today. All right. So there's a black version of this as well. And that's nothing I read online. I actually heard that from the locals who live in Taft, and they can trace their bloodlines back to the origins of Taft, Oklahoma. All right, now, let's talk about Sundown Towns 2.0. All right. Today, because sundown towns were about, well, you know, guess who's, depending on who you're talking to. But I guess the word would be discriminatory or whatever. So now, people can't be aggressive, or communities can't be aggressive like they were during the Sundown Town era. But now there are new ways to do it. Now, let me give a couple of examples. Two examples of numerous road signs documented during the first half of the 20th century include, in Colorado, there were signs on towns, or in, you know, to the entryway of towns, no Mexicans allowed after nightfall. And then there was, in Connecticut, whites only within city limits after dark. Okay, another example of sundown towns. But what they don't include in this article is there Mexican townships that had the same sign that whites weren't allowed in town after sundown. In this country, once again, and that's why we're playing sundown town chess. If you're going to play the game of chess, of sundown town chess, you need to know the landscape. White folks did not have carte blanche in every one of these. In, like I said, today there are 19,500 towns. With the Black Wall Street was a neighborhood. It was the Greenwood neighborhood within the boundaries of Tulsa, Oklahoma, the municipality. But throughout the state of Oklahoma at that time, there were 50 black townships that have never experienced any racial violence. And you know what? Most of those black townships were sundown towns to white folks. White folks weren't allowed in most of those towns. Either they were not allowed at all, or they had to get out by sundown. But for some reason, people like to use the Tulsa riots as a victimhood thing. My take on it is this. If some place is not hospitable towards me, there's over 4,000 miles of territory in the United States where I can find a place where I can live peacefully. Once again, there are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. There are over 41,000 zip codes in the United States. If you can't get along with people, if people bully you, if things are not copacetic with you and the locals, move to one of the 41,000-plus zip codes in the United States that exists, or one of the other 19,000 municipalities in the United States, or you know what? Guess what? Start your own. Start your own. And that's, you had Mexican-Americans that did that. They started their own townships. Nobody wants to talk about that. They're black folks that started their own townships. Guess what? In 2022, you can start your own townships. Now, discrimination has gotten a little bit sophisticated these days. All right? Since people, you know, it's not supposedly politically correct to discriminate against people for their skin tone, Sundown Towns 2.0 takes the form of HOAs, homeowner associations, condo fees, condominium fees, and other things like that. But guess what? In this country, where, once again, 86% of the population only, they're crammed into, let's look at the chessboard again. You got 64 squares. 86% of the population of the United States occupies less than four of those squares. I just extended it to four squares. 14% run amok with no competition, with nobody bothering them on those other 60 squares of a 64 square chessboard. If you want to be left alone, if you want to live free, matter of fact, if you want to create your own Sundown Town where you make the rules, I suggest that you play Sundown Town chess and go to an area where you will be left alone. If you choose to go to an area where you knowingly will be discriminated against, the operative word here is knowingly. I'll give an example of my life. Okay. Now, I'm in Florida. There was, I was looking for, this was about 20-plus years ago. So I was looking for some houses. Same county that I'm in right now. And there was this little house and this cul-de-sac that was for sale. And they had a telephone number that you can take down and call. You know, so I called. And it was a woman, very nice lady, and she gave me the backstory on why the house was for sale. And she said, well, this is the way she put it, and I'm paraphrasing because this conversation took place over 20 years ago. She said, so-and-so died, and we as neighbors, you know, it was a little cul-de-sac, so it was probably about 10 households total, okay, including this one house that was vacant. And I found out about it, you know, just by looking in the local newspapers at the time. So she said, some of us neighbors, we're trying to put our money together to buy the house. That's all I needed to hear. Because I'm looking at, you know what? The county that I'm in Florida has a whole bunch of other houses for sale. She made it clear. She was nice. They only wanted people in that house. I mean, if they're putting their money together, and that's what I call cooperative economics, if they're putting their money together as neighbors, number one, they all know each other. That's number one. They didn't know me, and I didn't know them. So I'm not going to call Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson or the NCAA or the NAACP or the mayor's office and exercise my rights to buy that house. No, she told me what they were doing. Hell, I would do it. I would do it. Neighbors want to get together, pool their money, and then put somebody in that house that they know. The American way, and I agree with that aspect of the American way. But hey, that's just me. So, look, people are, I really don't want to use the word racial, but people are tribal. People are tribal. You know, that you know, depending on what part of the country that you're in that scenario, if you're somewhere in Kentucky or Ohio or even here in Florida, you know, most of the neighbors could be relatives. You know, so mom, pa, kettle, they own that house. And then, you know, they got five other kids that own three or four more houses on that block. You can do that, you know. That's part of the free enterprise system. So, you know, that's my take on it. So with the sundown towns now, you know, I'm not condoning the violence that did happen to some that defied that. But, you know, even a rattlesnake gives you a warning before they strike. You know, if you hear some rattling, you're getting a little bit too close. And if you keep on coming, going in that direction, they're going to strike. But don't say you weren't warned. So there were black townships. For some reason, people don't like to write about that because racism in this country, victimhood in this country sells. Now, in the case, listen, let me go to Black Wall Street because that story is typically told from a victimhood point of view. But once again, this is documented. There were 50 black townships, about 13 or 15 of those towns still exist to this day. I've been in three of them, Taft, Oklahoma, Summit, Oklahoma, and Tallahassee, Oklahoma. I've been in those three black townships. Those black townships, and Tallahassee is older than all of it. And I think Taft is older than Black Wall Street. Old W. Gurley, who bought that 40 acres, I'm sure he was told, man, you might want to rethink this. That Tulsa, Oklahoma was known as Klan territory at that time. So once again, let's look at the chessboard on this with sundown towns, okay. 1921, because that's the year of the Tulsa riots. How else can you explain? Now, listen, once again, we're on the chessboard here. There are 50 black townships in the state of Oklahoma, 50 of them. And remember, the chessboard's got 64 squares. Black Wall Street and let's say there are 50 black communities, and they all had municipal charters. There are actually more than that because there are black townships in Oklahoma that are not municipalities. I give you one, and I've been in this one too. Blackjack, Oklahoma. Now you probably can't find that on the internet because I've looked for it several times. Blackjack, Oklahoma is a black community that's literally sandwiched right next door to Taft, Oklahoma, which is a historical black municipality. The only difference between Taft, Oklahoma and Blackjack is Taft has a municipal charter. It's a municipal corp. They're incorporated. That's the only difference. They're literally next door to each other. You can simultaneously have 1 foot in Taft and 1 foot in Blackjack at the same time, occupying two cities, two towns at the same time. All right. So in 1921, when the Black Wall Street thing went down, in addition to the 50 black municipalities that existed, there were other black communities in Oklahoma that existed. So you probably had about 100 black communities at that time in Oklahoma. All right. There are 13 or 15 black municipal corporate communities left in Oklahoma right now. The number of black communities that still exist, I don't know that number yet, but it probably is more than the 13 or 15 municipal ones that are still here. All right. So you got 100 black communities in Oklahoma. And O.W. Gurley decides to go into a hostile territory. Once again, look at the chessboard. We got all this land out here these other towns have got their own towns going. They got their own infrastructures going. They have their own mayors out there. They have their own city councils. But O.W. Gurley decides to buy 40 acres of land within the boundaries of, you may as well say Tulsa, Oklahoma at the time was a sundown town. Now, of course, he's not here to defend himself. But, you know what, I can take this from a social, let's take the race factor out of it. Tulsa, Oklahoma at that time was pioneer, was a pioneering type place. Rough and tumble people. They're working hard, man. They're homesteaders. So you have a 40-acre stretch of land within the boundaries of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then, and this happens today, you've got, they were probably the wealthiest community in Tulsa, Oklahoma at the time. If they weren't the wealthiest, they were one of the wealthiest. We're talking about, take your pick, black or Native Americans, oil barons. See, no, there were black oil barons in the United States. There were black ranchers in the United States. Oklahoma had a lot of these people, Oklahoma and Texas. You're talking about rich folks. And historically, not only black folk, but white, there was a time period in this country where wealthy people got lynched. The Salem witch trials, the Salem witch trials, which basically was Lily White. The backstory on that is, if you do the research on it, is it was a land grab. So they said, well, such and such is a witch, and so-and-so is a warlock, a male witch. So if you didn't give up your land or sell it to them at the price they wanted to buy, then they would declare you a witch or a warlock, and then they would kill you. That's the way the United States was at one time. This country went through a medieval period, and people just bought into it. So, discrimination still happens. You can do it through homeowner associations. That's a nice way to do it today. No, it has nothing to do with race, but we have our rules here with this HOA, and here's the way you got to live. This is the way you got to roll if you want to buy into this community. Because there are people that lose their homes to foreclosure, the homeowner associations, every day of the week. They're condo associations. Or, whether you're black, white, yellow, green, blue, or brown, you can go out here and buy your own acreages, 10, 20, 100, 1,000 acres, and you can set up your own community and write your own rules and be your own mayor, and whoever doesn't like the rules of your community needs to move on to the next town. But this country did through, you don't think there's some white folks didn't whip up some white people's asses for coming into their town? It happened in Boley, Oklahoma. Some white folks tried to come into Boley, Oklahoma, that had their own bank. And they got a beat down and an ass kicking and kicked out of town. Boley's a black town, historic black. That's documented. You don't think there was some white folks that went into an all-Mexican town, tried to start some shit, that they didn't get sent packing? It happened. Italian people at one time were not considered white as they were today. You don't think they was? Look at the Godfather movie. We can do a whole chessboard on that. Why did they have to set up? Italians at one time in this country, number one, were not considered white. They weren't Anglo-Saxons, male, they were, what's that term? WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. So they had to start their own communities They weren't hired. They couldn't get government jobs at that time. So they had to set up things. I mean, Godfather was the de facto mayor of a lot of these Italian neighborhoods at one time before they were considered white. Even Irish people at one time. That was the big deal with John F. Kennedy, because white Irish Catholic people were they weren't considered white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. You go over to, Ireland today. You got Northern Ireland, and you got, you know, the rest of Ireland. They still, well, they don't fight the way they used to fight, you know, back in the day. But they were discriminated against in this country. So pick your flavor. There are 41, what, Baskin-Robbins has 31 flavors? There are 31 flavors of sundown towns. It just wasn't a black and white thing. There are 31 flavors of it. There were Asians who bought up. Today, you know, today in 2022, it is easier to buy 100 acres of land than it is to buy something in Orlando, Miami, New York, Chicago, or any densely populated city. Once again, the more people it is, the more expensive it is, the more rules and regulations, the more if you want to buy 100, matter of fact, you want to buy 1,000 acres of land. Now here's the challenge of that. You know what? Let me lower that. Stop buying acres of land because you know what? I'm gonna need partners to help me manage this. I don't know enough people that I can get involved with this. But, and I'm barely handling the 14 or 15 acres I have now because they're in different locations. But it's easy to buy 100 acres of land because I haven't attempted 1,000 yet. It's easy to buy 100 acres of land, and it's less expensive to buy 100 acres of land than it is to buy a single-family house on a city lot in pick your city. New York, L.A., Boston, San Francisco, Dallas, Houston, Fort Worth, Austin, Texas, Jacksonville, Miami, St. Petersburg, Florida. Take your pick. It's easy to buy 100 acres of land in a whole bunch of places in this country and a lot less cheaper than it is to buy a house in a major – not even – I would say in the top 200 cities in the United States. You know what? Once again, there's over 19,000 of them. Okay. All right. We're going to go to the phone lines here in a moment. Anyway, but I had to bring out a sundown town chessboard. Yes, it was bad that – now, I'll break it down this way for sundown towns because there are distinctions with this. Yes, it's bad that – some black folks got their asses whipped, tarred and feathered, and probably lynched by some white folks for being in town after sundown. But at the same time, there were black sundown towns where black folks whipped ass on white folks for being in their town after sundown. The same thing for Mexican sundown towns, Asian sundown towns, and Italian sundown towns, and we can't leave the Jewish community out of the picture either. That's the landscape of the United States. And like I say, 86% of the population of the United States, I don't toggle with people on a chessboard, 64 squares. 5% of that is less than 4 squares. But I'm putting it at 4. I go buy land in the 60 squares where I have no competition. And if I get a vibe that, you know, they don't want me around, or I don't want them around, I just go to one of the other 59 squares that are available. We'll be back to the phone lines on Sundown Towns, your take on it, in about 3 minutes. So go get some water, hit the head, do what you got to do. We'll be back in three.
I was talking to a cat the other night. He said, what everybody's looking for this? What everybody's looking for today? They're looking for escapism.
It was written, in my point of view, from a very slanted point of view. Because, let me read it again. Sundown towns, also known as sunset towns, gray towns, sundowner towns, were all white municipalities. See, they don't talk about the all Mexican municipalities, and there are some. There are some. If you go to the southwestern part of the United States, look at the border towns of the United States through the state of Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, in Southern California. You had historical Mexican towns in those locations where you know, they weren't white folks friendly, but nobody talks about that. And I've already said that there were black towns where, you know, at Taft, Oklahoma, I've heard this from a local Taft person while I was in Taft. Next time I go there, I'm gonna get them to say it on a record, and then so I can put it on the internet. But now they have white folks in Taft now, a handful. But at one time, white folks were not. They had to be out of Taft by sundown. See, and there were a lot of towns like that that blacks put up. But most black people don't even know that black towns existed. What's mind blowing, even with the internet, is, you know, like I'm in Florida. What's mind blowing is you got a lot of blacks that were born and raised here that's never even heard of Eatonville, Florida, which is a historical black township here in Florida. They've heard the victim story of Rosewood, but Rosewood was not a historical black town. It was a town in Florida, and during the whole Rosewood incident, and I've had what's her name, Lizzie Jenkins, who's a Rosewood historian. That town, blacks and whites were attacked, and blacks and whites had to run to the swamps to hide from what was, you know, when they, you know, raised the town. And when they had reparations for Rosewood, the descendants of Rosewood, both black and white folks got those reparations for that uprising. But put that in the movie Rosewood. They told it from a black victimhood point of view. But, hey, that's the United States. We like victim stories. So, anyway, but I think you got to look at the chessboard of the United States. And you have to look at, I mean, because seriously, my whole thing is, why march and protest for trying to get your so-called rights in D.C. or Chicago or Boston or New York or L.A. when you got there's only 64 squares on the board. So why try to fight and scratch? And I mean, Medgar Evers, respect to him for what he did, high respect. But, man, looking at the chessboard of the United States, man, I'm not scratching and clawing over four squares. No. Let me go out to the 60 other squares where I'm left, and I make the rules. Which, that's what Harriet Tubman did. Matthew Henson, the original. The real Uncle Tom, and they've effed up that name, because the real Josiah Henson, he escaped. He learned the chessboard. Harriet Tubman, that's why she never got caught. Harriet Tubman and Josiah Henson, he's the original Uncle Tom, positive way. Sambo, actually, when people call Uncle Tom's these days, they really should be calling them Sambos. We'll have a talk on that one day. Uncle Tom's Cabin. We got to get into that book so we get the history of the word Uncle Tom and how that's been effed up and miscommunicated. Actually, they should be called Sambos. But anyway, Josiah Henson and Harry Tubman, just two other people, the people with the Underground Railroad knew the landscape. They knew on this part of the chessboard they would be legally classified as slaves. But they also knew if they made moves in certain directions, they can go from slave. Just like in the chess game, you know, you got a pawn. If a pawn makes it over to the other end of the chessboard, then the test, then the pawn could be, you can't morph into a king, but it can morph into a queen, knight, rook, or knight. Oh, excuse me, or bishop. But it's got to make it over to the other side of the board. So Harriet Tubman and Josiah Henson, you know, he went to Canada and he helped found a township there, and then he helped set up a school there to teach freed slaves who made it to Canada on that part of the chessboard, the North American chessboard, so they could be taught carpentry, blacksmith, nursing, whatever the skill was, so they can earn a living. He was one of the pawns that did that. He was one of the pawns that converted himself into a knight, a rook, or whatever you want to call it. Harriet Tubman did the same thing. They didn't stay in a sundown town situation. I know this is controversial, but when Kanye said it's a choice, Harriet Tubman made a choice. Josiah Henson made a choice. And all the people who traveled through that Underground Railroad and the Maroons, we need to play Maroon chess on here one day. The Maroons were people that, you know, after the boat docked over here, no, I'm not going for this. I've been cooped up on that boat for 1 or 2 months. I've been laying in my own, as a matter of fact, let me put it where the ghost get it. I've been laying in my own shit. I've been laying in some other people's shit and piss and blood, people dying around me. I'm done. That's where the Maroon population popped up. And a lot of Maroons escaped on that chessboard, and they started their own townships. And that's documented from the top of Canada on down to Argentina. They decided they were not going to be pawns. Another word for pawn is, unless you get the mind of a pawn to get to the other side. Now, you can be a victim pawn and go out early. Or you can have the set, you know what, I'm a pawn today, but, you know, give me a number of moves. And that's the thing with chess. We went through this, you know, a few times with the chess game. Each move that you make, the possibilities, your possibilities increase. But if you don't move, sooner or later you're going to be had. So my condolences to the black folks that didn't make it out of a sundown town in time. But my condolences goes out to the white folks that didn't make it out of a black sundown town or a Mexican sundown town or an Asian sundown town or an Italian sundown town in time to save their life. I'm now getting off of my soapbox for today. Now it's your turn, 619-768-2945. That's my take on sundown towns using the sundown towns chessboard. 314, area code, your mic is open.
Oh, does nobody else want to talk about sundown towns?
Hey, there are some people here, but I cannot push their button until they raise their hand like you did.
What happened to you yesterday, L.A.? You have technology problems?
The phones, I found out what happened, but the phones went on a blank, and so it's one of those blog talk days that happens every now and then.
LA.
I thought it was going to happen again today, but we got it straight early on.
Look, Velveeta. I haven't heard her in a couple of days.
Velveeta, you mean Viada?
Viada, yeah. Velveeta,
she's around, you know.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. I keep telling you these people curse, man. They curse.
I've heard that before from other people.
Because what you're saying about Sundown Town, they ancestry experienced sundown damn countries. Right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I heard it for myself. Next time I go to TAB, I'm recorded. But I heard it from one of the locals. Like today in 2022, there's no problem like that. But at one time in TAB, Oklahoma, white folks were not allowed in town after sundown. Now, I heard that from a black person in a historically black town. I heard that four or 5 years ago. I heard that. I was
absolutely
in the conversation when they told me.
And you got your Johnny come lately, the only one to talk about what they've heard or reading some damn book, which is have been challenged all up and down the mountain. White's been ran out of countries too, right?
Oh, yeah, out of some of these towns, At one time in this country, let me give the prime example. One of the reasons, and I said this during the podcast today, one of the reasons why it was a big deal when John F. Kennedy got elected, because at one time, white Irish people were not considered the white, full-fledged white folks that we look at today. They were discriminated against. They were in ghettos. Okay? They weren't able to get certain jobs. They had to form their own schools. That's why it was a big deal when John Fitzgerald Kennedy got elected. It was a big deal to that community.
Well, absolutely. And I was just finishing something up on these black politicians in St. Louis that have been indicted. Jeffrey Boyd, Alder Person. Muhammad. Oh, God, I can't think of his last name. I thought it was Khaled Muhammad, but I'm not sure. And Automatic Board of President Louis Reed, who ran for mayor several times, I think at least two times. Guess who's putting them under? They've been indicted. Bribes and land deals and all that stuff. And you had Sylvester Caldwell, Pine Lawn. You got Washington. I can't think of Washington's first name. And Wellston and some others. You done had them everything from stealing dog food in the store on down to this. I know them black folks, man. They got a crooked side to them. And you wonder why come these major cities don't never go no place. The elements to make them go someplace is just not there.
Mm-hmm.
You had some pretty good ones, too. Freeman Bosley Jr. was a good mayor. His daddy was crazy. Daddy wanted to shake down his constituents to raise money to send his daughter to college. They going to go after some other names, too, all the way up to federal representatives.
You know,
that's just the way it is.
As an aside to what you're saying, I think I experienced maybe I've got two sundown town experiences in my life. One, the lady said that the neighbors were getting together to buy the house. But I was up in Camden, New Jersey. I don't know if anybody here, if anybody here has been to Camden, New Jersey, press 1. I want to hear your side of Camden. But Camden, New Jersey is right across, it's, you know, you take the bridge from Philadelphia over into Camden, New Jersey. It's right across the bridge. But there's Camden, and then there's North Camden, New Jersey. And now I'm kind of a, I get along with everybody. I'm a multicultural guy. But, man, I drove through North Camden, New Jersey, and I got to admit, because I'm the type that I'll get out the car, but this was one place where, you know what, I better not stop this car and get out of the car. I got a real bad vibe up in there. But if any, I don't know, like I said, if any of you have been to North Camden, New Jersey, you know what I might be talking about.
Well, you know, I had the same thing happen in I think that was Robinson, Missouri. Mm-hmm. And I was younger, riding with some older fellas. Robinson, Missouri is over there off of Lindbergh near McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
which is near Bowen, one of them little small hick little towns, all black. Come riding up in there one night. I was riding with James, Larry Patton, James Patton, Patterson. No, I don't remember what James said. But anyway, going through Robinson, and a group of black males stopped us. And they pulled James out and started beating the hell out of him.
Mm.
I stepped out the car to look and see what was going on. Matter of fact, a guy reached over me. I was sitting in the back seat on the passenger side. He opened the door and reached over me. James was sitting in between me and somebody else. I don't know who the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't know who the fifth person was. Can't remember. Grabbed James by the arm and just lifted him over me out the car. That was pretty strong.
Hmm.
And now when you think about it. So they took him around on the driver's side and started beating the hell out of him. I got out the car. Looking at all this, one of the guys came over and stood next to me. I reached in my pocket and pulled out a pack of Juicy Fruit gum and offered him some.
Well,
you got a long beard.
You can't when you're outnumbered like that. You know,
I think I was in high school. Matter of fact, I had to be in high school. But no, that's just the way it is. See, people always talk about what whites do to blacks. They don't talk about much about what blacks do to blacks or whites do to each other. And like I said before, your ancestors, quote unquote, who they call ancestors, they like to go back to their ancestors as they met these shores, right?
Mm-hmm.
In these narratives that they talk about slavery. But the thing, boy, I got a lot of people contacting me about buying property. But the thing that they don't want to talk about, especially in cases on this subject, sundown town, the ancestors was coming from, I guess you can say, a sundown country. Maybe a continent. And you got to ask, why in the heck were they gotten rid of? No, they had to be gotten rid of, right? Because you got stuff in the house. You got stuff that your mother, did you get rid of it? Because it's of value, if I'm not mistaken. Well, it must have not been any of value where they was gotten rid of. People can deny it and feel bad about it. Just like they're trying to shake down the federal government for reparations. You only tell one side of the story. And they never ask the hard questions. They just kind of fluff, skate right over. Better known as bug dance. They bug dance over the questions. And,
you know, I believe, because I think he used a very accurate word, shake now. I'll go along with that. I think, here's what I think about what will eventually happen on the federal level of reparations. I think eventually, some kind of way on the federal level, it will happen. Why? Because you're going to have shakedown people that'll, you know, I think that, you don't think it's going to happen?
No, well, here's the thing. See, things have happened in the past because there was good logical reasons. That stuff about the United States giving Jews money out of the country for something that didn't happen, that's a damn lie. If it was a legitimate reason, like with the Japanese, who would deny their Fifth Amendment protection of the Constitution, that's a reason, legitimate reason. Argument, if you want to call it. But blacks ain't got no argument. What did the federal government have to do with Rosewood?
I don't know. What this H.R. 40, it's, they haven't even picked a commission yet for that.
H.R. 40, is what is it about? What have you came to believe it's about?
I believe it's, they're trying to, you know what, I'm a butchered up, I really don't know. I'm thinking it's not a law, obviously, but it's supposed to put together a commission, and that commission is supposed to
based
study.
On what? Why did they name it 40?
I don't know. You know, Wikipedia would have all the information.
If time goes by and you got more English and people that come along and hear these cliches, it just sounds good to them. But it has no basic substance. There's no, you ain't going to indict nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Reed in St. Louis got indicted. Willis Reed married to a white female judge, too.
Okay.
I don't know who Jeffrey Boyd married to. In Muhammad, he's with the Nation of Islam. I'm surprised, too, of him. But there's no basics, L.A. I don't see any. 40 acres, that wasn't white folks' land. That was Indian
right.
land.
Right.
I mean, come on, let's tell the truth about it. All right, so we have this argument today. Today is what, Tuesday? Thursday, mm-hmm. You'd be arguing about something else. You'd be arguing about how white folks stole land from Indians. Well, if they give you the land that they stole, quote unquote, from Indians, give it to you, what did that make you, accomplice?
In possession of stolen property, that's a crime, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, in possession of stolen property, whatever they call it, from state to state, that's a crime also.
Yeah, and they talk about taking somebody to the world court, the United Nations. Well, hell, why don't you take them countries that got rid of you, but them tribes, they still around. They talk about it. If you get into a cordial conversation, they still around. They talk, why don't you take them to the world court? The International Court, the United Nations. Of course, it wasn't no United Nations. It wasn't even a League of Nations. But that don't matter. The United States wasn't even a country in some periods they like to talk about.
Yeah, and the H.R. 40 bill is trying to go before the United States was, they go back to 16th. So they're trying to get in, well, like you said, the whole bill, I would call it a shakedown bill, too.
Yeah, it is a shakedown. So,
which is basically how Jesse Jackson made some of his money, shaking people down. Al Sharpton's also a shakedown artist.
All right, that's what they do. They go out and start these organizations. They start these organizations, give them all sorts of names and purposes that they're supposed to be not tax deductible. And they go to these companies, Coca-Cola, General, whatever, and say, well, I'm going to point out something that you're doing is wrong. And upon your admittance that you've been doing wrong, one of the negotiated settlements is going to be, you need to contribute to my company, our foundation, our purpose, our tax-deducted business.
Right.
So that we will be able to identify and be able to operate and provide services to the poor, and so we can be able to continue to point out and address other ELCs, opportunity operations. So when they donate to them, then at the same time, you know, I'm spending all my time at this. I got a family to raise. I need to get paid a portion, a salary that's commensurate with what I'm doing.
Right.
It's my name. It's associated with this organization, Jackson and Sharpton. There's been others too. So that's how they, that's what they do. That's what they do. Then, too, they out there doing this stuff. And there's a lot of things that could be brought forward on them and presented to a grand jury. But no, we just let them ride. We need them at some point for other political purposes. That's how this stuff works. City of St. Louis ran by Democrats for 72 years. The thing that pissed me off with some of these guys is they hated Donald Trump. Going along with the narrative of the news media and others, because there's been times when they have been in the company of Donald Trump, sitting at his tables, his functions, borrowing money from him and getting his blessing in my run for the president of the United States and so on and so on and so on. Then after all this good that he's done to them, they turn and attack him. So when they go out and do their malfeasance against the citizens, constituents of the town they was elected, and then they end up being indicted on bribery and all kind of schemes, is that not the same like they attack and turn their back on Donald Trump? The Judases for 35 pieces of silver. We got inflation. We got to raise it up, in a way.
Well, people have their hand out.
Absolutely.
They had their hand out. Pianki, you got other people here, but we're going to end it, wrap it up for today because I got some things to do here. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Everybody have a good rest of the day, if I can find my outro music.